We'll move on to the next case, McGreal versus Ostro. Mr. Levy.
Morning. May it please the court. My name is John Lovey and I represent Officer James McGreal. And I think if we were to take a fair look at this record, it is very hard to conclude anything other than this was a hatchet job. I mean, this was an outcome determined event where they decided they were going to get rid of Officer McGreal and then they were going to try to make it work. Look at the facts, and the district court sidestepped them. November 10th, 1997, the mayor finds out that there's an outcome investigation going on and he demands the police chief's resignation. He doesn't ultimately call.
I was a little unclear from the brief. What is McGreal's current status? Was he ever actually fired? Or
he was not, Your Honor. The attempt to terminate him dragged on for about 5 months. It got all the way to the board proceeding, and it was resolved by a mutual agreement to stand back with a stipulation that it wasn't going to affect his right to pursue this lawsuit for the retaliation that he experienced in attempting to terminate him.
But he's back on the beat, so to speak?
He is, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks.
And in this case, we have a rare window into some real retaliation. Where do you get these kind of candid admissions where the police chief says, right when the mayor said he was going to call for my resignation about starting this Elks Club investigation, we decided we're going to get rid of McGreal. We decided we're going to bring in Tom McGuire. The very first entry in his billing record shows he drove to Alsip that night, and they began the process to get rid of this guy. Within 10 days, they serve him with notice of charges. They've scoured his whole 20-year career, where in more than 20 years, he hasn't had more than a one-day suspension. All of a sudden, they're looking for wrongdoing, digging up old things, and they interrogate him for 3-4 months, can't find anything. Then they...
Yeah, I have one real quick fact question. Has the district court ruled on the attorney's fees?
Unfortunately, the district court is still taking that under advisement.
Okay, and now my real question. How do you distinguish Coquinas? You know, the case where the officer appeared in disguise on television to charge the police chief with being vindictive.
It's the defense's favorite case because Mr. Koenig was good enough to be a counsel on that. This is clearly a different case. There was disruption in that case, and in fact, Judge the majority opinion said that the reason we were willing to credit the district court finding that there was a potential for disruption was because there was disruption. Here, many months went by with no disruption. And I'd like to talk about it, you know, piece by piece, each of the things they're alleging. What they're trying to do is make this case fit into a Pickering box where it clearly doesn't fit. I mean, it's almost like a game. We want to get rid of this police officer, so we're going to charge him with the kind of things that if we end up in this room, these are the kind of things that courts say will stick. But it is, you know, square pegs, round holes. It doesn't fit.
Well, of course, you know, the defendants are citing Chesler, or rather Chesser, for, you know, qualified immunity unless it's an extraordinary case.
Well,
this case extraordinary?
I think it is extraordinary, Your Honor. And I don't think that there's a standard that we have to meet that we have to show extraordinary. I think we have to show that there's a dispute of material fact, although I do think this is an extraordinary case. And let's talk about it. The first thing they charge him with, conveying to the police chief that there's gambling going on at the Elks Club. This bizarre charge. He's right. It turns out they investigate it, and they find
Maybe
gambling.
Maybe you could explain to those of us who are not big gambling people, what is the significance of the reset button?
I guess if you're playing for fun, some people apparently play video poker for fun, then it doesn't matter what the counter's at. But if you want to be able to gamble, you got to be able to set it to zero so you can get your winnings. So McGreal finds that kind of...
But what do you mean set to zero?
Like, if a person's going to play, they have to know what the counter is.
Well, what do you mean by the counter?
I'm not a police officer. The way it's been explained to me is they keep track of whether you're up or down, 16 units, 14 units. It has to go to zero if you're going to be able to pay out in a gambling sense. You have to have a reset. Each person has to start new. You know, and again, I'm not a police officer. This is how it's been.
But if you were just playing for fun, wouldn't you restart? I mean, wouldn't you start anew? You wouldn't just pick up the last guy's score.
I guess I don't have the answer to that, but the record is that evidence, that's prima facie evidence of gamble.
Okay.
And what happens here? They say, well, potential for disruption to who? McGreal sends that memo to nobody but the police chief and Snooks. He does it very discreetly, in contrast to the Greer case cited by the defendants, where a guy fires off a press release. They say this is all personal. He does nothing but sends it to the chief. Look, I think there's a possibility that gambling at the Elks Club is being overlooked. And the chief presses him on it. And McGreal puts the suspicions in writing. And those suspicions are, in fact, corroborated. And they want to say, well, there's a potential for disruption, leaving aside the issue that disruption to the mayor under the case law is not disruption to the police department. There's a flaw in their argument, and the defendants should be called to explain it.
What proof do you have that the lieutenant manipulated McGreal's performance evaluation?
Well, that's, of course, one among, you know, a list of allegations that Snooks is involved. But what happened was McGreal was set to be evaluated by the same guy he was always evaluated by, the guy who did the Midnight Guys, and who liked McGreal.
No, I
and
then abruptly, answer what I asked you.
Oh, because Snooks admits that he was the one who gave the order that the guy who likes McGreal is not going to evaluate McGreal. A guy who's more aligned with me is going to evaluate McGreal. So McGreal became the only Midnight Guy who wasn't evaluated by the guy who worked Midnight. And again, that's just one among the many facets of Snooks' involvement, including his interrogation, etc. But getting back to Your Honor's point about the mayor, if they were really interested in potential for disruption, why wouldn't they have at least waited to see if there was gambling? They brought him up on charges before they even invested. You know, the charge was you have conveyed that there's possibly gambling going on at the Elks Club. The charge happened before they investigated it. And then they investigated it, and they found it. And they didn't even wait to see if the mayor was involved. And that again, shows that this is an outcome determinative event. Let's talk about the second thing that they're using in their Pickering box, and that's, of course, the police report. They say this is a very serious accusation, and it is. To allege that police reports are missing from the records division is a crime. They were missing from the records division. The record shows that a police report that was adverse to the mayor's interest, showing that a bar that he was aligned with should be shut down, was ripped up. And they should be, you know, if they want to tell the jury, well, that's how we do things, the fact is, Wood couldn't think of any other example where a police report was ripped up. So we have a police report destroyed, and then we have a police report removed from the records division. In Snooks' unmistakable handwriting on that envelope says, I didn't put this police report, this is a second police report on the same topic, I didn't put it in the records division to prevent officer digging. So at the time Snooks is interrogating McGreal about the supposedly false statement that there are reports missing, Snooks knows that there were reports missing. And I'm not a police officer, again, I didn't know before I got involved in this case, but that's a very big deal. To have police reports not in the official records division is a big deal. That's like a part of the court, in a sense. These are official public records. And McGreal is in a position where he, as a police officer, has knowledge that, in essence, a crime has been committed. There's funny business going on. There are missing police reports. He speaks out about it. That deserves the highest First Amendment protection. That's the kind of thing that the First Amendment is all about. And that happened in January, and then there's no disruption. And then comes November, and the mayor finds out about the chief, and they say, we're going to get rid of this guy. In those intervening 10 months, there is no disruption. The chief, in the entire record, the chief's got 500 pages of deposition, he's got a 7-page affidavit. Where's the disruption caused by McGreal's public statement that there were, in fact, police reports missing? He has a two conclusory sentences. Well, I think that this might affect the way the department looks at it. And this court has been very clear that kind of conclusory statement of disruption isn't going to cut it. And they want to argue potential for disruption, but they're turning it on its head. You can't wait 10 months, see that there is no disruption, and then say, well, we thought there was a potential for disruption. That's the Kent case, the Tenth Circuit case, and that's Gustafson too. They're, again, trying to invoke this Pickering potential for disruption where it just doesn't exist. And, of course, the third Pickering element is this JIB letter. Now, if we were up here talking about whether, you know, McGreal should have gotten a reprimand, whether he should have been suspended, that would be one thing. But they're saying this is the kind of allegation that you can take away a law enforcement officer's 20-year career for writing a letter saying, look, things were happened that were unusual, and he was within his rights.
This is with regard to the Sean Taylor.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Now, I was unclear about the facts there. Now, did Taylor get a 12-month or an 18-month suspension?
I understand he got, whatever it was, it was the opposite of what Snooks said, but to us, I think he got an 18-month, and Snooks told him it was a 12-month. But that wasn't the issue. What happened was, Snooks told McGreal it was just the supervision. He left off the ASAP, he left off the victim impact panel, and he left off other conditions of the...
Oh, I see. So it's not the 12
no,
to 18.
No, not at all.
It's the other sanctions.
He left off the other sanctions. And Snooks says, all right, I made a mistake.
So...
He says, I corrected it by a 3x5 card.
So you're saying McGreal thought that it was just a 12 or 18 month
exactly.
supervision. What does that mean, supervision? You're allowed to drive, I take it.
Again, we're outside of my expertise about what the 18-month supervision is. I think you can still drive. But the important thing was that what Snooks conveyed to McGreal would be differential treatment because everybody else gets these other aspects of their sentence.
And the other things are?
An ASAP, a victim.
Oh, you have to what?
ASAP.
What's that mean?
I think that's when you go to the board and you have to explain that I'm not an alcoholic and they have to make a decision about you. It's a panel.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a victim impact panel and there's a fine. And what McGreal was conveyed to from Snooks was he didn't get any of that. And Snooks says he made a mistake. And what he said also was conveyed to by Snooks was, we're done. This matter is over. The department has looked into it and it's over. So what does he do? He doesn't go to the press. He doesn't do anything but write the letter saying these are unusual circumstances. No disruption. Your Honor, in the record...
Well, he did accuse Judge Sterba of being corrupt, didn't he?
Well, no. That's not a fair reading of the letter. The letter says these are the circumstances. There's a process here. Unusual circumstances are supposed to be inquired about. Judge, the record is clear and undisputed that there was no disruption in the relationship between Judge Sterba and the department. No rift. No stress, no disruption, nor was there any disruption with the state's attorney's office. So there's a no disruption. And before they could take the position that, well, we reasonably, you know, around here in Alsip, if police officers do things like that where there's a potential for disruption, we get rid of them. They have to explain to your honors about Officer Doe. This guy had a 10-year rampage of mayhem and insubordination. And they're saying, well, if you write a letter to the JIB and, you know, it might make us look bad, you know, we got a short trigger around here. We get rid of police officers who do things like that. Nobody ever explained Officer Doe, and the district court sidestepped it, and so did the appellant.
Mr. Levy, let me make sure I have something right. You
sure.
have conceded that you didn't properly preserve this equal protection claim.
We have, Your Honor.
Okay.
We apologize to the court and to the defendant.
Okay.
I'd like to talk next about municipal liability because
maybe you want to reserve your time.
I will, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Levy. Mr. Koenig?
Morning, Your Honors. Morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. Mr. Long will be presenting the argument on behalf of the municipal liability issue. this case isn't about gambling. It isn't about gambling at the Elks. The charges, at least the stated charges that were brought against McGreal, had no reference to gambling at the Elks. What it had reference to, at least as it related to the Elks issue, was McGreal promulgating rumors. McGreal being a rumor monger. McGreal accusing the mayor of being on the take. Gambling.
Now, wait a minute. Doesn't an officer have the responsibility to go to the chief if there's a violation of the law and to make an arrest? Would he be charged with malfeasance of duty?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The distinction here is that he took rumors, according to the chief, that were 18 months to 2 years old.
How do you confirm anything without investigating it, whether it's a rumor or a fact?
Well, the chief had looked into it already.
What difference does that make? So he's in on it.
Your Honor,
he could very well have been in on it.
That's correct, Your Honor. What we maintain distinguishes this case from others is that these statements that McGreal made were false. These statements that were recklessly made had no basis in fact. And the issues are really, what are the facts as the chief reasonably determined those facts to be?
Did they find gambling?
Yes, they found gambling.
Oh, well then why isn't it a fact?
Because we took no action against McGreal based upon gambling. If Your Honor looks to the charges that were filed before the administrative review, before the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, the charges contain absolutely no reference to McGreal talking about gambling. What it says specifically is you took rumors that were 18 months old and you started us off on a wild goose chase.
A wild goose chase?
A wild goose chase concerning gambling? Accusations that the mayor was on the take. That's the wild goose chase that what we ended up doing, and after the chief of police consulted other law enforcement officers, two other chiefs of police, he said, I've got an officer at 17.
There's a kind of odor, though, that clings to the village of Alsip, I must say.
I'm sorry,
Your Honor? You can understand his suspicion.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You can understand why McGreal was suspicious, even if some of his suspicions were not confirmed.
Then why doesn't McGreal's initial statement say, I place no credence in unfounded rumor? The first letter...
I think, as Judge Coffey says, I think police officers that rumors are, of course, not a proper basis for prosecuting a person, but they are a proper basis for further investigation by police officers.
And the chief did that. The chief investigated further. He called in the state police. State police looked into it and found nothing. Your Honor, what brought everything to a head in this case was the unfounded allegations that he made regarding Judge Sterba.
Now you've shifted now to the judge from the mayor.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's what ultimately brought this to a head. There is no evidence. There is no evidence from which a jury could conclude that McGuire was hired in November. The undisputed evidence is that he was hired in January of that year. McGuire specifically said, I was hired earlier. I just don't bill for phone calls. I had phone calls with the mayor.
You know, I have to, I'm sorry, forgive me, but, you know, there certainly is a tremendous factual dispute about when Mr. McGuire was hired. And, of course, we have the statements that he was hired much earlier than his billing records would indicate, and also the assertion that he didn't charge for telephone time. But my lawyers do, and almost every other lawyer I've ever seen does, so it seems a little unusual, you know, on its face. On the other side, we have the billing records, which do indicate a very suspicious timing for his hiring, and when we're dealing in summary judgment, why shouldn't that be construed against, the defendant?
Well, even construing that at the time that Mr. McGuire was hired, that was also the time that we initiated our investigation. That followed a week or 2 weeks on the heels of the chief learning about his allegations concerning Judge Sterba. At the end of November, I believe it was November 5 or November 4, he sent his letter, and the chief heard from a sergeant that he had sent the letter. So the issue of when McGuire was hired, I submit, Your Honor, is a red herring. It doesn't deal with or suggest that it was the mayor's furor, if you will. Nor is
well, there. I found the role of Dr. Ostroff quite. I mean, it's a reminiscent of the Soviet Union. You know, when they used to they dealt with dissidents by sticking them into loony bins. You may regard McGreal as disruptive and a pain and so on, but what a basis was there for thinking that he had a psychiatric disorder? And is this McGuire's modus operandi that the way you get rid of people is to stick Dr. Ostroff on them?
There is no credible evidence in the record that suggests that Dr. Ostroff was some type of a quack. Dr. Ostroff has been retained by the DEA and about other federal agencies to specifically do examinations like this, fitness for duty examinations. The chief has a constitutional obligation to make sure that his officers aren't nuts, that his officers are in fact fit for duty.
But there's no basis for supposing, but what is the evidence that McGuire has a psychiatric disorder?
I guess, Judge, him flying off the handle half-cocked. The chief, at the suggestion of the...
What do you mean, flying off the handle?
The allegations regarding Judge Sterba. What his allegations concerning...
Flying off the handle? I thought you meant something like, you know, he has some sudden rage and starts breaking things.
Absolutely not, Judge. What...
What you call flying off the handle is simply acting what you regard as a disruptive manner, but most people act disruptively. They're not insane. They may be insubordinate.
What's wrong with making the assessment of whether or not he is insane? We didn't fire him initially just saying, you're insane. We hired somebody to make an evaluation, to make a determination. There's no evidence that we did not in good faith rely on that, or that somehow the deck was stacked in advance.
Mr. Koenig, I have to say this. Dr. Ostroff's report looks like it was written by a lawyer. The language on page 4 of your brief so closely tracks the case law that...
If I may, Your Honor, Dr. Ostroff is a lawyer.
Oh. Uh-huh.
He's a lawyer?
Okay. He's a lawyer. He's a lawyer and a psychologist.
Oh, really?
Okay.
How many times has the department used him?
I think according to the records, on one occasion, I believe on one occasion in the past, I want to say in the early to mid-90s.
But now, why didn't they use him with Officer Doe? Was he asked to undergo a mental health evaluation and therapy? Because his actions, if all of this is true, certainly seem much more disruptive than McReel's.
Officer Doe's problems was alcoholism. Officer Doe, if you look at some of the at one of the reprimands, he was reprimanded for not taking counseling as he should. He took the pledge, Your Honor, and he is undergoing treatment, a different type of treatment.
Why didn't you give McReel's treatment?
We tried, Your Honor. We said, go for short-term therapy for 2 or 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, and fine. And he refused to do it. He said, I'll consider it. And Ostroff recommended.
But I thought the circumstances were that if he went, you still could fire him.
Now, there's no evidence in the record to that effect at all, Your Honor. The evidence is, had he agreed, things would have been over. Ostroff would have said, if he agrees and he starts it, he can continue on his employment. There's no need to seek termination. But if he doesn't, I'll tell you, he's not fit for duty because of the problems that he's causing, because of his cognitive abilities.
You said that you will?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did you say that you will make that determination? Or who?
No. Ostroff had made that determination.
Yeah.
Ostroff had said, based upon my assessment, if he doesn't agree to this therapy, in my recommendation, he's not fit for duty.
What is the nature of this cognitive defect he has?
Recognizing that there aren't skeletons in every closet, recognizing that there are two sides to every story, at least as I understand Ostroff's
report. Paranoid is what?
Well,
what is Ostroff's diagnosis? Psychiatric pigeonhole is McReel's.
Well, he didn't classify it into any DSM category.
He classified it into a legal pigeonhole.
Well, that's what he did. He says he doesn't.
That's what he does.
Yes.
I mean, look, this is completely phony.
Well,
what you have is a psychologist saying this person is disruptive.
What, Your Honor, there
is. Of course, it's a legal conclusion.
There is no evidence that this is phony. There is no evidence that he dummied up the report. There is no evidence of any communication between the chief and Ostroff to submit a dummied up report.
It is a psychological report.
Pardon?
It isn't a psychological report.
It is not?
No.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Right.
Mr. Koenig, I know I'm using up all of your time, but there's something I'm troubled by, and I'm troubled by the waiver that Mr. McReel was asked to sign, because we have a man being evaluated for mental fitness, and to work as a police officer, and you claim he was found unfit, but then seemed to think that an unfit person is capable of waiving his rights to mental health confidentiality, and it seems contrary to the purpose of the Illinois statute to allow a waiver under those circumstances.
It seems to me that unfit to be a police officer is significantly different than incompetent, or lacking the competency to know what he's signing. The chief had the right to give him an order to submit to that examination. Illinois law recognizes it, and if he didn't follow an order, he could have been fired. He signed that, and that order was legal.
Sir, what does the Illinois Mental Health and Development Disability Rule say about the confidentiality of it?
In the context of waiver, it's not addressed. There's no cases under Illinois law dealing with waiver. There's very few cases construing the act at all. It was our position, based upon a statement made in an appellate court opinion in Suarez, that it only applies to a, quote, therapeutic relationship. This was not that relationship, and that's what Judge Shader found, that this was not that type of relationship.
How do you get that out of it? Doesn't it say that it cannot be disseminated? Doesn't that mean by to anybody?
Your Honor, our position is that the dissemination, and at least as Judge Shader addressed, dissemination can be to people on a need-to-know basis. The chief has to know it. He has to be able to get that information in order to make his assessment. If we don't fire people that have some psychological problems, then we're hauled in here in a 1983 case.
Don't you mean Judge Norkel?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Don't you mean Judge Norkel?
No, Judge Shader had this case initially and ruled on the motion to dismiss count four. Then the case was reassigned to Judge Norgel, and I don't recall how Judge Norgel got the case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kern.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Long, does he have any time? Wait. Mr. Long.
Mr. Long first.
I think you could answer a question. Now, if I understand it, Judge Norgel, sua sponte, invited an application for attorney's fees from your side?
Well, you could call it sua sponte invitation. After the ruling and then an order was issued, inquiring. I prefer that terminology, which is what it was. It wasn't ordering any party to submit, meaning the defendant to submit a fee petition, or directing that a fee petition would be granted.
It seems very odd. It's hard to think of this as a frivolous case.
I've never seen that before.
And I think it should be noted that it's still pending. It may be denied. And also, even
if... What kicked off Judge Norgel? I don't understand.
I have to plead ignorance, Your Honor. I was not involved in this case at the lower level.
Fine.
I became on the appellate level.
Fine.
Further, with regard, I presume you're inquiring as to the reassignment of the case, that argument?
No.
Oh, just in general. Given the time constraints, with regard to village municipal liability, I'll be brief.
So does municipal liability have any significance here? The individual defendants, would they be indemnified if there were judgment against them?
In certain respects, they may. Again, I have to plead ignorance. I apologize for that, Your Honor. Mr. Kirk may know better than I, since I got into it in the middle of the appellate process. What it boils down to, Your Honor, you've heard a number of factual arguments back and forth about what the chief did, what the chief said. In terms of the village, all the liability is based on a respondeat superior. There is no indication anywhere of any policy that directed the chief and or the mayor, even if you consider them to be final policymakers for the village, to initiate any sort of discipline or termination proceedings with regard to any of their employees who exercise their First Amendment rights. What it boils down to is respondeat superior, nothing else. While not conceding the final, that either of those gentlemen, Chief Wood or Mayor Andrews, is the final policymaker, council may come up and discuss the admission that's addressed in the briefs. Very briefly, in response to that, if you read it carefully, all that was admitted by the village was that the chief initiated the proceedings. That makes him a decision maker, not a policy maker. Again, the whole fundamental flaw underlying the plaintiff's entire case against the village is the absence of any indication whatsoever that the village itself directed, encouraged, or as a rule, had their authority, such as the chief and mayor, discipline or act against those individuals who assert their First Amendment rights. And for that reason, there is no liability for the village in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Long. Mr. Levy, how much time does he have? 3 minutes.
I'm going to just briefly address the points that were raised and talk fast. Mr. Koenig started with his best foot forward is he says, well, McGreal claimed the mayor's on the take. McGreal did not claim the mayor was on the take. McGreal sent a letter to his boss saying, look, the Elks Club's being overlooked. The memo said, you know, there are Elks subsurgeons who say that the Elks Club's being overlooked because there's a possibility that an official is on the take. He didn't even use the word on the take, that there's an official involved. And Snooks ordered him, why did you put that in writing? Look at the memo. He says, I'm surprised you would put that in writing. Now tell me what you mean. So in response to Snooks' order, he said, look, two Elks subsurgeons say that the mayor is, in fact, getting some of the kickbacks. That's not an irresponsible communication. He communicated it to his chief and nobody else. And he says that the chief was already looking into it. Well, no, because, well, the chief wasn't looking very hard then because the gambling was ongoing. The chief claims he told the Cook County Sheriff's Police to investigate the mayor's involvement. But all we know is the Cook County Sheriff's Police did not investigate it. And he said at his deposition, well, they refused to. We don't know exactly how the mayor got investigated. As far as November 10th, I think Your Honor's hit it right on the money. You know, November 10th is the first entry in his billing record, and it is the meeting where the mayor and the chief admit that they talked about going after McGreal's job at the meeting when the mayor found out about the Elks Club gambling and demanded the chief's resignation. As far as Dr. Ostroff, Mr. Koenig suggests that Dr. Ostroff's not a quack. The fact is, Dr. Ostroff says, you guys can't fire this guy. You know, he was paid a lot of money for his troubles, but even he said, this guy is not terminatable. And at the, you know, they say they're just checking to see if he's insane. Apparently he wasn't. But at the meeting where it all, the report was disseminated, the choice was put to McGreal, will you agree to these cognitive therapy sessions? And McGreal, in writing, stipulated that he is absolutely willing to discuss cognitive therapy treatment. And that's part of the record because it's in writing. We'll discuss it. They handed him a pre-printed form saying, sorry, you're done. You're off duty. So he was willing, and that's the only evidence in the record.
Now, was he willing because he wanted to be willing and thought he needed some help, or was he willing because he wanted to keep his job?
He was willing because they said, if you don't cooperate, we're going to fire you. I mean, he's being railroaded. He sees he's on the track, and he says, you know, I'll do what you tell me to do. And, you know, part of this was they wanted to label him as an insane person, and that's partly why he got these damages. But what Your Honor was referring to about Dr. Gruenberger, the choice was either we're going to fire you or you will agree, irrevocably consent, to let our Dr. Gruenberger decide when you can come back to duty. That's the choice, and that is Soviet Union-like tactics. As far as the waiver, you know, their only argument here on the Mental Health Act is that the Act doesn't apply. The terms of the Act are very clear. It says diagnosis, and it says evaluation. And the only case they cite is the Suarez case talking about a pharmacist. But when you have actual treatment that falls within the Act is very plain. You cannot disseminate it. And McGreal said he was willing to discuss a limited waiver that would allow them the information that they need, but he didn't want them to get 26 pages on his personal life. And they said, we ignore you, you sign the consent, or you're fired. And that's what he did, and they disseminated it. And frankly, Judge Shader did get it wrong. That count shouldn't have been dismissed on the pleadings. Judge Norgel has prejudged this case. And if this is going to be a hollow victory, if it goes back to Judge Norgel. And we would suggest that, pursuant to Circle Rule 36, that this court assigns it to a random judge. And I'd like to talk briefly about municipal liabilities.
Your time has expired.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you very much to both.